Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Tomorrow, Britain takes its vote on the Brexit to decide whether to stay in the European Union or go it alone. The stakes and passions are high. Here's former London Mayor Boris Johnson at the BBC's Great Debate at Wembley Arena last night.
If we vote leave and take back control, I believe that this Thursday can be our country's Independence Day.
And here, British Prime Minister David Cameron in Bristol today, making the case to stay in the EU, urging voters to the polls with an outcome in polling too close to call.
Please give it everything you've got in these last hours to make sure that people go out and vote tomorrow. Go out and vote Remain.
To leave or remain, it could go either way by all accounts with very real consequences. The debate turned especially dark last week with the murder of a promising British politician. Issues here of the economy, democracy, culture, power, the West, all on the table. This hour, On Point Britain, on the eve of the Brexit vote. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's your advice to the British? What's your hope here? And if they go, what consequences do you foresee? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We have a terrific panel with us today. From London, Lionel Barber joins us, editor of the Financial Times. His paper has argued for the UK to stay in the EU. Lionel Barber, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
From London, Tim Stanley joins us, columnist for the Daily Telegraph. He says, go. His latest column is headlined, Brexit isn't about nostalgia, it's about ambition. Tim Stanley, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
And with us now from London, Roger Cohen of the New York Times. He grew up in the UK and has been watching very closely. Roger Cohen, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Hi.
It's great to have you all here. Lionel Barber, let's just affirm to start with. I'm looking at, I think, a poll from your paper that shows the polling in advance of the vote, the two sides within a point of each other. It is literally too close to call at this hour.
Well, actually, Tom, we run a poll of polls. We don't run individual polls because we don't think they're reliable. And I would be really careful about this. It's a referendum. It's not a general election. Mm-hmm. And there are maybe a lot of shy remainers or even shy leavers. So the pollsters don't have a good record in recent elections. We're being very careful.
Is there, Tim Stanley, do you have a sense of where the momentum is? I know you favor going. We'll come to that. But how do you assess what's likely at this point? Do you have a good feeling for it, or is it just impossible to say?
It's very difficult to say. I agree a lot of it's going to be about turnout. My feeling is that as of last week, momentum was behind Leave. They surged ahead in the polls in quite a significant way. But my suspicion is that since the tragic murder of Joe Cox, that may have arrested that. And that a lot of people who previously were vaguely for Remain will now feel strongly for Remain and come out. And many people who are strongly for Leave might feel less strongly about it. My feeling right now is that, yes, it's very tight, but I see an advantage for Remain as we head into tomorrow.
Roger Cohen, you've grown up in the UK, now back in London, watching this as the home stretch to the vote here. We just heard the NPR News saying key issues here, economy and immigration. Is that how you read what people are most focused on, Roger?
I think the issue of immigration and sovereignty, we just heard Boris Johnson, former mayor of London, talking about Independence Day if there's a vote to leave. This is nonsense. Britain remains a sovereign nation. The two parts of the European Union that Britain doesn't like, the euro and the Schengen Accords, which allow for borderless travel, Britain is not part of them anyway. Britain has the best deal in Europe because it takes the parts it likes and leaves those it doesn't. So this is not about Independence Day. I don't know if it's wishful thinking, but certainly in the Scottish vote, the Scottish referendum on Scottish independence, prudence prevailed at the last, and there was a fairly clear majority in favor of remaining within the United Kingdom. So especially after what Tim just mentioned, the murder of Joe Cox last week, I think that combined with a last-minute feeling that this is a leap in the dark, which it really is. I mean, there's no next it to Brexit. No, nobody knows what comes next. I'm hoping and do believe that Remain will prevail.
Lionel Barber, you're editor of the Financial Times. Your paper has been strongly in favor of remaining in the European Union. Can you lay out the basics of the argument that you, your newspaper, make?
I'd very much like to do that, but I want to second what Roger
yes.
said. Boris Johnson doing a very passable imitation of Will Smith in Independence Day. He wasn't actually very convincing. He's made all sorts of false claims. He's talked about the Leave campaign ruthlessly cuckolding, these are his words, Britain out of the United Nations and the IMF. All this is fantasy and made up. And that's one of the reasons why there's been a lot of people have been discombobulated and have followed the Pied Piper. But anyway, back to the economic case. The fact is that if Britain were to leave the European Union, there would be a shock, a short-term shock, and a long, medium to long-term shock to the economy. the first point, of course, is it would introduce tremendous uncertainty. Britain has grown over the last 30, 40 years. The turnaround does come around the time of joining the European Union, European Economic Community. It's partly because of Margaret Thatcher's labour market reforms and some of these big, important measures in the 1980s. But it's also because we've had access to a single market, a very important trading zone. And if we left, and it's very important to understand, and this is quite extraordinary, that the Conservative Party, which under Margaret Thatcher backed the single market, now they're actually trashing the single market. And the uncertainty with regard to foreign investors, American investors, which would be introduced by leaving, and it wouldn't be just weeks or months, it would be several years, as we disengage from Europe and then try to find our way in the wider world.
Tim, Stanley, you're for going. There are many arguments that can be
Absolutely.
Made here. We'll dip into them. Lionel begins with the economy and in his first pass ends with that. What's your argument for going, leaving?
Okay, so the term Independence Day has been raised, and let me defend it because I think it's actually a fair one. It's a fair one on two counts. First of all, American listeners must understand that the EU is not just a single market. It also has a political dimension to it. It has grown a parliament, it has grown a commission, and it gets to write many of the laws which end up being passed in Britain. So as it presently exists, it has metastasized into something which is starting to look increasingly like a federal state. Imagine if America, when it joined NAFTA, had been told that not only would it trade with Mexico and Canada, but also so Mexico and Canada would get to have a say in the writing of American laws. I suspect America wouldn't like that. So it's Independence Day in terms of getting our sovereignty, regaining control of our sovereignty right now. But it's also Independence Day in terms of heading off what the EU is going to become. The people who run the EU are mostly interested in the fate of the Eurozone, and they know that the only way to make a single currency work is to push forward with further political and economic integration. Moreover, the EU also wants to have a foreign policy, and we know because it's been drawn up right now, and they're discussing it openly, that the EU is discussing having an army. Again, just imagine if the American people, when they joined NAFTA, were told they would have to share an army with Mexico and Canada. Would they want that? I suspect not. So yes, for millions of us, it really is a question of independence, not from the single market. What will come out of this, I suspect, will be a renegotiated relationship with that market. It's about liberating us from the political dimension of the EU.
Roger Cohen, are you sympathetic to this argument that political power has passed without a commensurate vote to Brussels, to the EU, and people just don't want it?
Well, Tom, you'll be shocked to learn that I'm not very sympathetic to it. The EU Commission proposes, but it's the Council of Ministers composed of the 28 member states that decides. And to suggest that Britain is not able to prevail in the vast majority and certainly all the important issues at a European level is simply not true. And to raise a European army, please. You know, the Germans are talking about some tiny unit that would work perhaps in the field of intelligence. I mean, there is no prospect whatsoever of a European army this century, I would say. So it's like the other spectres being raised by the Brexit camp. Turkey is about to join the European Union. This is nonsense. Turkey is not going to join the European Union anytime soon. There are not going to be tens of millions of Turks flooding into England or Britain anytime soon. So, no, I'm not very sympathetic to the argument that Britain has somehow lost control of its fate. On the contrary, Britain is much more able to prevail and get its views across within the 28-member European Union than it would be outside it. And as Lionel just said, what would happen after a leave decision would be the divorce alone would take 2 years to negotiate. After that, you would have to begin negotiating a series of trade deals with the European Union. Switzerland has been doing this since the early 1970s, and after 40 years or so has
dozens of agreements
mm-hmm. of various kinds with Europe. This is what Britain would be facing.
Lionel, we just got a minute before the break here, but in brief, we'll come back to the economy. Is there a sober assessment that says, yes, indeed, Britain has lost some degree of sovereignty, and can you sympathize with those who say we want it back?
Well, of course it's lost a degree of sovereignty, because as Tim may not quite have grasped, sovereignty these days, and in fact, in the past, it's not like virginity. It's not as if you've either got it or you haven't. Mm-hmm. The fact is that sovereignty is shared. But the fact that the British Parliament has called a referendum shows we're sovereign.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about Britain's big decision whether to take the Brexit and leave the European Union. The vote is tomorrow. We're looking at the issues, the drama, and what is driving the debate with Tim Stanley of the Daily Telegraph. He says, go, leave. Lionel Barber is editor of the Financial Times. He says, remain, stay in the EU. Roger Cohen, with the New York Times, leaning that way as well, grew up in the UK. He joins us from there right now. You can join us as well. Are you surprised? Have you found yourself surprised? It's even on the ballot. Did joining the EU back in the day seem like a one-way ticket to your mind? And how do you understand the motivation of those who want to go, those who want to stay? Were you shocked in the midst of all this at the murder of British MP Joe Cox last week? Hear a little sound of what the British are hearing. This is Justice Secretary and Brexit leader Michael Gove speaking Sunday with BBC News, saying Brexit would be an affirmation of faith and hope in Britain.
Whether we vote to leave or remain, there are risks to our future. There are challenges in the global economy. My view is that those challenges will be easier to meet, those risks will be less if we vote to leave, because we will have control of the economic levers. We'll have control over money that we currently send to the European Union, we'll have control over our own laws, and as a result, we'll be able to deal with whatever the world throws at us.
Nimble and on its own. In a speech today in Bristol, Prime Minister David Cameron, who of course says remain, made a final appeal urging voters to remain in the European Union. Here's Cameron.
If we want a bigger economy and more jobs, we're better if we do it together. If we want to fight climate change, we're better if we do it together. If we want to win against the terrorists and keep our country safe, we're better if we do it together.
Lionel Barber, there is clearly strong support for both here. Nearly even, who knows, as you say, it's hard to read, but there's strong support to go. How do you interpret that? How do you read it?
I think the Leave campaign have fought a disciplined campaign, and they've been very good on messages. This notion of taking back control, I think, has been extremely effective, and it's resonated. The fact that it's not really, it's very misleading, is another matter. For example, when Michael Gove talks about regaining the levers of power on economic policy, does he not recognize that actually on taxation, for example, we still have that power in Britain? We are not in the single currency. That also means we have strong control over our macroeconomic policy. If we were out, or we would still be affected by events in the Eurozone. But I give credit. Boris Johnson, who is a mercurial figure, has been very disciplined. Michael Gove, he's got a great mind. He's very articulate. The fact that Michael Gove, a former education secretary, says, well, the people, as he did the other day, are tired of listening to experts, is another matter. The last point I would say is, when we haven't talked about him yet, is Nigel Farage, the leader of the UK Yes. Independence Party, has essentially been backseat driving this campaign, because this is the anti-immigration party. He's the one who's put it on the table. And what he says, and he is a born-again populist, has definitely resonated with communities that have been affected by immigration. The government, it should be said, successive governments have underestimated the numbers and the impact of immigration, and the most recent government has cut spending in areas affected by immigration. So that fact, those facts together, disciplined message, understanding people's fears about immigration, is one of the reasons we've got to the point where Britain may be on the brink of triggering an event which is the biggest since the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989.
Tim Stanley at The Telegraph, what about immigration? Do you see the Leave movement as, at some place in its heart, as an anti-immigrant movement?
I think if you spoke to many Leave people, you would find that's true. I think many other people are involved in it for other philosophical reasons too. There are sort of small state libertarians. There are great free traders. There are people who actually believe that once we leave the EU, we'll be free to take more people from outside the EU. Again, I hope listeners will understand that it's not true that Britain hasn't given up control over certain things. Commerce, agriculture, fishing policy, but also the key one, which undoubtedly has caught people's attention this election, is control of our borders. By being a member of the EU, there is nothing we can do to stop any citizen from the EU coming here to work here. It works the other way around, by the way. They can't do anything to stop a Britain person going over there as well. But I think that goes to the heart of people's sense of a loss of control, which they do associate with the EU. And you've got to understand that in Britain, as in America, we've had many years in which people's incomes have not gone up, in which prices and the cost of living has gone up, in which people feel their wages have been depressed as a consequence of immigration. And so for them, this language of Independence Day is indeed about rejecting a certain establishment ethic, a sense of a consensus which is not working well for them. And that's why I think something which is on many levels quite theoretical and dry, the issue of political sovereignty and who governs, has indeed become almost a culture war, because there are many Britons who feel right now that their government doesn't operate in their interests, and they see this as a way of taking back control of it. I'm not saying I agree with that or not, but that's what's informing a lot of this mood, and I suspect Americans will recognise a similar feeling on the right, and indeed the left, in their own country.
Roger Cohen, I want to come to you in just a moment, but it turns out I'm going to lose Lionel Barber in just a second here. Lionel, I want to come to you one more time in that case and ask about consequences on the other side of this. And maybe first of all, to Tim's point, how do you address the dissatisfaction that is evident in this apparent support to leave? What's at the heart of that dissatisfaction, to your mind? How might it be addressed? Let's say there's a vote to remain that still needs addressing. How do you do that?
Well, I think there are three points, and I do apologize for leaving. We just got a very heavy day on the newsroom. First of all, that we got to talk about immigration, and we've got to do something to, reduce it by numbers within a specific period. We need to help the communities adjust. We have to obviously understand too that if the Eurozone was growing more, people would stay. So I think that's the first point. The second is that we need to go back to Europe. I think there'll be a huge sigh of relief if Britain stays. And we've got to find our friends. And there are friends, by the way. The notion that there's this plucky little England, Great Britain, or once Great Britain, that goes to Brussels every other month and is beaten up by the other Europeans is a nonsense. I mean, I worked there for 6 years. Mm. Roger used to be there. I know how Europe works. It's about alliances. And if you are deeply Eurosceptic, you're half engaged, you're going to find it difficult. But there are a lot of people who support an idea of reform. We've had huge influence in Europe in the last 30 years. We were the ones who pushed for enlargement to Central and Eastern Europe. We were the ones who supported agreements on budget discipline. We were the ones who helped create the single market. So there needs to be a new reform agenda to be backed. And then just the last point, which is really important for Americans to understand. If Britain were to leave, this would have profound, we don't know the full consequences, but it would weaken the West. The West would be less coherent. We would have a Britain outside the European Union, which is the main organizing. It is a democratic body, and it's an important political construction. And it's one of the reasons why America has essentially, since 1989, assumed, well, we're okay, we can leave Europe alone, we need to think about Asia, Middle East, etc. So leaving will have profound geopolitical consequences, and America will necessarily be concerned about it. So the only people who are interested in weakening the European Union are people like Marine Le Pen in France, the populist, Russia, at a time it's involved in aggrandizement in Europe, they'll be quite happy if we leave, and Donald Trump. But I promised this program that I wouldn't mention Donald Trump, so I'm sorry about that, Tom.
And there it's been done. Lionel Barber, editor of the Financial Times, we have to let you go. I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you very much for your time. Roger Cohen, jump in on this front if you would. You say demagoguery is a part of the reason for the degree of support that there is for leaving. But demagoguery doesn't work without something that's bubbling beneath it that may incline people toward the message. What is that, in your view, that has such a significant number of Britons saying, no, it's time to go?
Well, I think, as Lionel just said, immigration is an issue. And the trade-off in the European Union is that if Britain is part of a market of 500 million people, that goes with the free movement of people within that market and their right to seek a job where they choose. It applies also to young people in Britain who can go and work in Frankfurt or Lyon or wherever they choose to go and work. And it's interesting that young people seem to be massively in favor of Remain. And the fact is that those concerns about immigration have been seized upon. And incidentally, Tom, what you're really worried about is non-EU immigration, the vast numbers of desperate refugees pouring into Europe from Syria and elsewhere. If you're worried about non-EU immigration, there's absolutely nothing to the case that leave reinforces Britain in that regard. On the contrary, Britain is much better off coordinating with its EU partners in terms of trying to deal with that problem. But there is concern about immigration, and that has been seized upon by a baying press. We haven't mentioned that yet. The Daily Mail, The Sun, The Telegraph, with Nigel Farage of UKIP, the UK Independence Party, the puppeteer pulling the strings behind. And its message is basically the message you see in the last UKIP poster, which says breaking point against an image of a dark-skinned refugees / immigrants. And, of course, that did not lead directly to the murder of Joe Cox by a man screaming Britain first. But to say that this was an apolitical murder is nonsense. This was the backdrop to that murder. And the people like Tim who make a reasonable case for Britain leaving the European Union have in the end to ask themselves if they're ready to get into bed with those kinds of people.
Some are, perhaps, some are not. On Monday, former Conservative Party Chair Baroness Saida Warsi spoke with the BBC about her dropping support for the Leave EU campaign, cited her disgust about this poster unveiled by a Brexit supporter that showed migrants lining up on the border of Slovenia with the caption, "Breaking Point."
This kind of nudge-nudge, wink-wink, xenophobic, racist campaign may be politically savvy or politically useful in the short term, but it causes long-term damage to communities.
Tim Stanley, is there a racist, xenophobic whip being applied here to the in the home stretch of this campaign?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
What about the poster? What about her point right there? I mean,
this is, yeah, the poster which was unveiled by Nigel Farage. It's very important to note that Nigel Farage is not an official leader in the Leave campaign.
He's not nobody. He's right out front. I mean,
he's certainly very visible, but he does not speak for all Leavers. The poster was disgusting. I don't agree with the sentiment behind the poster. It's actually a little bit surprising because Nigel Farage was one of the first people to actually speak in favor of taking refugees from Syria when it was an unpopular thing. But I do not regard him as an essential part, a central lead, official leader of the campaign. Look, I've been in favor of leaving the EU since back when I was a democratic socialist and I was on the hard left. It's one of the things which I have consistently stuck with, even though I'm now really quite right wing. I'm now more a sort of a classical liberal, which something I think your listeners would understand what I mean by that. And for me, it is very simply about democracy. We've heard a lot of talk about Council of Ministers. We've heard a lot about the Commission. These are complicated things. They're things which work miles away on the European continent. They're not things that we have direct influence over. And that's what we're about reclaiming within the Leave movement. We're about saying it should be your MP representing you, making the laws in Parliament, and Parliament being sovereign. The normal representative democratic method. And we're saying, yes, let's trade. That's great. We're all for doing that. But there's no reason why that needs to go hand in hand with handing over democratic responsibility or parliamentary sovereignty to Brussels. That is what we wish to reclaim. There is nothing racist about that message. It's got nothing racial to it at all. On the contrary, I'm not a little Englander and I'm not a little European. My area of specialism is the United States. I spent early part of this year in Africa. I find this is about leaving the EU and going out into the world, reclaiming a globalist heritage and not being obsessed all the time with the fate of the European continent. So I utterly reject the idea that this is about small-mindedness. On the contrary, this is about ambition and globalism.
Roger Cohen, do you have no sympathy with this feeling that the democracy just isn't close enough to home when it's run through Brussels?
Well, I think that I'm not very sympathetic to it. I think there are instances where the European Union meddles, but to suggest that your representative at Westminster in Britain is not the person who represents you, and that this has somehow been diluted in some devastating way by the European Commission. I mean, this is not true. I mean, for Tim, this is about democracy. I mean, I guess for me, being of a different generation, it's much more about peace and security and prosperity. Britain, since 1973, when it joined the European Economic Community, on the whole, it has prospered. And it is surrounded by a 1,000-mile buffer zone of peace. And that 1,000-mile buffer zone of peace is not something that Britain has lived with for any considerable periods of history. And it should not be taken for granted. The miracle, the European Union is the great miracle of the second half of the 20th century. I lived for a while in Berlin. Mm. I would drive into Poland, and I didn't know where the border was. I was the New York Times bureau chief in Berlin in the late 90s. And I had to pinch myself to remind myself on that very territory, more than 10 million people had been killed just six decades previously. I covered the war in the Balkans. What do the countries of the Balkans want to do? They want to get into the European Union. It's a magnet. It's a peace-spreading magnet. And Britain would disrupt it grievously if it chose to leave.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we are talking this hour about Britain's big decision tomorrow whether to take the Brexit and leave the European Union. We're looking at the issues, the drama, what is driving this debate. Yesterday in the BBC's Great Debate at Wembley Arena, Scottish Tory leader Ruth Davidson cautioned voters to be absolutely certain of their decision.
You have to be 100% sure, because there's no going back on Friday morning if you're, and your decision could cost someone else their job. Now, I know that the EU isn't perfect, but the benefits far outweigh any costs. And the Britain that I know, the Britain that I love, works with its friends and neighbours. It doesn't walk away from them.
But that's not the only view. NPR's All Things Considered, you may have heard this. You talked yesterday, they talked with Emma Pullen. She's at the British Hovercraft Company, the town of Sandwich in England. Talked here about why she's an advocate of the Leave vote.
I don't want to be European. I want to be British. I love my country and I'm very proud to be British and I don't ever want to lose that pride. And it does massively worry me that being in the EU stops us from having the pride in our country that we should have.
Tim Stanley is with us, columnist for the Daily Telegraph. He says, go, it's time to leave. Roger Cohen is here with the New York, from the New York Times in London today. Grew up in the UK. He says, bad idea. UK should vote to remain. Frank in Corinth, Vermont. You're on the air, Frank. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Long live classic liberalism. I'm definitely in the Leave camp. I think the world right now needs to regroup, get comfortable with their own communities, have an inner exchange between them, and then go back into the world and make it a more peaceful, wonderful place. We're having this discussion in the States right now, and we're having these issues, and I think it's time states' rights actually has more autonomy than the federal rights, so that we can start at home first, our communities first, and then branch out.
How will it solve things, Frank? How exactly do you think it'll fix things up if they leave the EU? What's the dynamic that kicks in that would make things better if you think things are a mess?
It will give them a sense of idealism again, that they're taking control not just of their economy, but their democracy and their sense of liberty, capital L. It will inspire a sense that they really do have control. And when you have this idealism and inspiration politically, I think great things come of it.
Frank, I appreciate your call. One more right here. Zach, Pagosa Springs, Colorado. Zach, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I just happened to turn in on your program here. And it seems to me that England making this, if it does make a huge move and leave the European community there and continue in a more independent manner, that the fear that keeps people from being innovative will start to affect that whole entity, and more people will start planning, even if they've been thinking about leaving, more and more people will begin to want to move and on too. And
you mean other countries, Zach? What do you mean? Other countries will leave?
Yeah, other countries will think about leaving. They may not be thinking about leaving now, but they may start thinking about it, and as there's a progression of that kind of thought, things get a bit chaotic when everybody's not in harmony, more or less. And England, by leaving, would kind of be a bit discordant for that whole community, and we might have some chaos there.
The European community, pretty big deal. Thank you, Zach. Tim Stanley, let me give you those two. Control, our first caller says, versus chaos, you hear Zach saying from Colorado. He fears chaos if the UK goes, and maybe others do as well.
Thank you both for both those calls. On regard to the chaos issue, would it lead to chaos, Brexit? It's important to grasp that what you have in parts of Europe right now is already chaos. The European Union is not delivering for Greece, which it has been compelled to have austerity budgets which have greatly damaged its economy. It is not working well for Italy, which, because it's a member of the single currency, cannot do what it would normally do, which is inflate its currency and sell goods cheaply in order to improve. So there already is chaos. Having said that, Britain is really the only country which is seriously thinking about leaving the EU. Other countries might toy with leaving the euro as a currency, but they're not talking about leaving the EU.
What about Roger Cohen saying, what about this great span of peace and what has been overall great prosperity in these decades? And Lionel Barber's parting concern that the West itself could be at risk of disintegration if the EU pulls out of this community, if Britain pulls out.
And I'm confused by this, because on the one hand, those who are for the EU say it has no real political power at all, and we're overthinking it. On the other hand, they say that if the EU was damaged in any way, it would completely undermine the West. So which is it? Well, the reality is that actually in strategic terms, the EU isn't terribly important to the West. It's NATO that's important. It's NATO and the nuclear bomb, which kept the peace during the Cold War. When the Cold War was over, we actually had terrible wars within Europe, which the EU did nothing about. We had those wars in Yugoslavia. Recently, the EU has started to imagine it has strategic importance and has invented a foreign policy for itself. It got stuck into Ukraine. It encouraged Ukraine to move away from Russia, and that in part precipitated the crisis between Russia and the West. So we don't really want the EU to think it has too much of a foreign policy. But also, just to pick up very quickly on Tom's point about liberty, I'm really struck by the positivity in the Leave campaign. It's engendering this sense that if Britain regains control, who knows what we might choose to do? We might choose to be a more fairer, equal society. We might choose to be more free market orientated. But the point is, it'll be our choice. And that's what I think is energizing people.
Roger Cohen, this unraveling concern of our caller in Colorado against really from Vermont, our caller saying give control. You might say give freedom to the British. Let the British be British.
Well, I think there is. First of all, for Tim to say there's chaos in Greece, and I've been in Italy. In fact, I was in Italy last week. Mm. If that's chaos, give me more of it. Mm. Similarly in Greece. I mean, what is your standard here by which to measure chaos?
Well, it's been a pretty rough patch for Greece.
I remember a Europe that was divided in half. Half of it was enslaved. Mm. Spain and Portugal were under dictators. This chaotic Europe, why are other countries, Serbia, Bosnia, others, why are they so determined to get into this club that produces chaos? No, as Adam Michnik once told me in Warsaw, we want to be normal. And our way to be normal, and think about, you know, the mortgage and sending kids to school rather than being taken away in the middle of the night by secret police to some prison, is to join the European Union. So the notion that the European Union has no strategic importance, I just don't buy that. Yes, there could be. First of all, the United Kingdom could break up. Scotland is pro-EU and might well choose to go its own way if the vote is for leave. There would be chaos in Ireland. Where would the border be? How would that work with the Republic of Ireland in the EU and Northern Ireland?
Not.
Presumably not. Mm-hmm. And as we know, you know, Europe is going, President Putin just annexed part of a neighboring state. He wants to see the fragmentation of Europe. There are populist leaders from Sweden to France to Italy who will relish any sign of fragmentation. So I think there is some potential there for dangerous kinds of unraveling. As for, you know, Frank's point, you know, liberty, more liberty, I don't really see how you can construe the European Union as enslaving in any way. I mean, it was Britain that went into Europe to free Europe. By Frank's definition of liberty, I guess Britain wouldn't have done that because it would have been looking after its own communities at home. And liberty, Britain is not an insular nation, and its idea of liberty is one it has always sought to, like the United States, spread in the world, and that is much better achieved through the European Union than otherwise. Tim mentioned NATO. Does NATO compromise Britain's sovereignty? The United Nations, does that compromise Britain's sovereignty? Do the alliances that Britain has around the world, do they compromise Britain's sovereignty? How?
Tim, I'll bring that to you. A couple of more callers here. So many lined up to join us. In Birmingham, Michigan, Robin is calling. Robin, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'm Scottish, but I'm also British.
All right.
And I look back to the 20th century, and it's my opinion that that great experiment of building the EEC and then the EU has been really important in maintaining a level of peace in Europe. We were ravaged by two world wars. Since the creation of this remarkable conjoining of people, we have seen greater peace. Looking to the future, I think that Britain leaving the Union would be a retrograde step. there would be a fragmentation occurring. And I think tomorrow we want to be together rather than separate. We want to be able to talk to people across Europe. So in my opinion, the idea of leaving the European Union is dreadful, and I would strongly encourage people in Britain to remain.
Robin, what about Scotland? It voted and stayed in the United Kingdom not very long ago at all. Part of the reason was the EU access. Could you see Scotland breaking off?
No, I think that the two are actually connected in some regard. If you're Scottish, you are part of Britain, and as they voted, they wanted to remain part of the United Kingdom. But they also, in Scotland, have strong ties with France and with other parts of Europe. So to me, the model that was shown at the independence vote for Scotland can be brought forward tomorrow to maintain a cohesive Britain in a connected Europe. And tomorrow, that's even more important than it was in the past. It's not about trade. It's something that is bigger, in my opinion.
We'll pick it up, and I appreciate your call, Robin. We're looking at Britain's big decision tomorrow, the vote on whether or not to stay in the European Union. One more caller, and I'll bring it to you, Tim Stanley. Kate in Cheshire, Connecticut. Kate, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hello.
So I'm also British, and I very much want us to stay in Europe. I'm so sorry. I think this goes back hundreds of years. One of your callers or presenters said something about I'm not being a little Englander, but I think that's exactly what it is. I think that we ruled the waves. We had this fantastic, if you want to look at it in that way, empire. We don't have that empire anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't rule the world, and I think we need to get over ourselves and accept that we are much better as part of Europe than trying to do this on our own.
Kate, I appreciate your call. Tim Stanley, let me give you the floor. You've got callers here from Scotland and more. British Kate saying, let's look for the big piece here. Let's look at the troubles of the 20th century and not repeat that, put ourselves in a position to repeat that. Let's be big with Europe.
Yeah, I'm not making an argument for withdrawal into Little England. I've never done that. For me, it's not about that. For me, it's about turning away from the sclerotic continent that is Europe, from the sclerotic project that is the EU, and instead seeking new horizons in Asia or America. For me, it's not about that at all. This point about Scotland is an interesting one. You see, the comparison between the United Kingdom and the EU is very instructive. The United Kingdom works because we have a demos. We have a sense of loyalty towards the concept of the UK and its political institutions. People understand them, and they are prepared to stand and fight for them. And that's ultimately what makes the UK work and prosper. You do not have that for the EU. You may have it within the EU. There might be constituent parts of the EU which feel a loyalty to its political institutions and will be prepared to fight for them. But you certainly don't have that feeling among British people towards the EU. But the EU is integrating, is growing, is trying to become one single united state. So why on earth would Britain want to retain that relationship when it doesn't feel a part of the demos with the EU? This is not about withdrawing within ourselves. This is about saying the EU, where it's going, we don't want to go. We want to get off and go somewhere else.
That certainly sounds like withdrawal. Now, you've got your reasons for it, but it sounds like withdrawal.
It's a withdrawal from the EU, but that doesn't mean withdrawal from the entire world. The two propositions aren't necessarily the same.
Roger, who needs it? Yes, it's next door, but the whole world is out there. Great Britain certainly has plenty of experience in engaging with it.
Yeah, Tom, but I think this idea, there's talk of reviving the Commonwealth, there's talk of distance not mattering today, but you know, Britain exists in its neighbourhood. Britain, like other states, cannot ignore geography. Geography is a fact. And Britain is going to be affected, as Lionel said earlier on, one way or another, by the continent that's next door. And I think Robin's point about a cohesive Britain in a connected Europe, I think those were his words, it's a very good point. And if this demos of the United Kingdom is working, of course, you know, all such unions have problems. 47% of Scots didn't vote to leave the United Kingdom because the British demos is perfect. No, they thought the demos wasn't working for Scotland. And there are lots of things that are not working. I don't want to to feel like I am saying the European Union is perfect. No, no, no. It's very far from perfect. It's been through a very difficult decade. The structure of the euro is problematic. There needs to be, as Tim was suggesting, much greater accountability and transparency in Brussels. But all these issues with the European Union are issues that Britain can lead in resolving. And it's very important that it does at a moment of transition in global affairs, where American power is receding to some degree. You have a very assertive Russia, and the European Union has proven over decades now to be a tremendous source of peace and stability, and Britain would be foolish to turn its back on it.
We're going to leave it right there for today. We will all watch the vote tomorrow and what follows. Roger Cohen with the New York Times joining us today from London. Thank you very much for being with us, Roger.
Thank you, Tom.
And Tim Stanley at the Daily Telegraph, also in London, of course. Tim, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Julie Jopp, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, Caitlin O'Keefe, James Ross, and Abby Ruzica, with help from Ashley Bailey, Sarah Ernst, Dina Kleiner, and Tanya Raleigh. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.